Good morning. I love to see the kids leave because, you know, I'm getting ready to talk. It's great. Super. Well, last week we started a new series called Expanding Your Circle of Love. The idea is that it's one thing to love the people who are close to us, but Jesus is calling us to expand our circle of love, to love others. Last week, we talked about loving your enemies. Like, what is that? And today, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but then Jesus is going to talk about other kinds of people to love and give us examples. So we always want examples about what does this look like in loving people. And if the phrase, love your enemies, is one of the most famous phrases of Jesus, the one we're going to look at today may be even more famous, but for sure more misunderstood. It's the saying, turn the other cheek. And so it's a phrase that we're going to see Jesus talked about and used a couple times, but it's been misused in some really terrible ways. I've heard pastors say to a woman who was being hit in the home, domestic violence, well, just turn the other cheek. You just have to take it. And I just don't think that's what Jesus meant. I don't think that he was, I'm convinced he didn't mean that. And so this phrase, what does it mean to turn their cheek? It's one of those phrases that's gotten popular in culture and it's gotten used to describe all kinds of behavior and to give defense for all kinds of behavior. So what I want to invite us to do is to look at what Jesus said. I want to give you some insight into the first century, because there's 20 centuries that have gone by and there's things that happened then that we don't understand today. And help us learn what this means and so we can live it out, because Jesus did say it and he expects us to live it out. So turn to Luke chapter 6. And when you found Luke chapter 6, let's stand to our feet. We're only going to look at two verses today, 29 and 30. And you'll see pretty quickly this phrase, turn the other cheek. You got it? Luke chapter 6, verse 29. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them, your tunic, the inner shirt. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Well, let's stop right there because there's a lot to talk about right there. So you can be seated. And just so you're remembering, verse 29 comes real quickly on the heels of verse 27 where Jesus says, love your enemies. So that's what people are hearing. And they're still stunned by, I'm supposed to love my enemies? And then Jesus moves into this other language about what we're supposed to do when someone, quote unquote, slaps us on the face. You guys ever heard the preacher David Jeremiah? He's a kind of a famous preacher in the United States. And I heard him tell a story, or I heard that he told a story about this guy who was a boxer and a prize fighter and, you know, winning all kinds of titles and things like that. And he became a Christian. And he's got this violent, you know, background, and then now he's a Christian. He's like, well, how do I live this out? And he's starting to grow as a Christian, starting to grow in the Lord and mature, and he is growing so much that the day comes when he feels like God's calling him to be full-time vocational pastor. And so he's like, okay, well, where do I do this? And he sensed that the guy was leading him to start a church in the worst part of town. And so out of obedience to God, he starts this church in the worst part of the town. And not long after he arrives, he gets a knock on the door, and there's some guys from the neighborhood who are there to welcome him, if you know what I mean. Welcome him into the rough neighborhood. So he opens the door, and it's before he can kind of figure out what's happening, a guy just clocks him right in the face. Wasn't expecting it, knocked him back a couple of steps. He's like, whoa. And then he remembered the word of Jesus, turn the other cheek. So he's like, okay, so he steps back into the door, and another guy hits him the other side of the face, and this one knocks him down to his knees. He's like, what in the world? And he's like, remembering the words of Jesus, and then he stands up, and he goes, kind of pulls his shirt like this and he goes, guys, you hit me once and Jesus said, turn the other cheek. You hit me twice. I have no further instructions from the Lord. Get ready. He just lays into him, you know. And of course, that's not what we're talking about. That's not what it means to turn the other cheek, you know, take two smacks and then let him have it. You know, that's not what's happening. I think it's a funny story. And so what does it mean for us to turn the other cheek? And how did people hear Jesus say that? Well, let me back up again just to last week because we talked about this idea of love. And this is the context. It's so important when we're studying the Bible, when we're reading the Bible, to not pull one verse out or two verses out or a word out and then try to figure out what it means. It can only be understood in context. And this is the same way for us. You can say something to a person and you pull that out of context. It's like, oh no, that's not what he meant at all. So Jesus is talking about love. And this word we talked about last week, Jesus could have used any number of words to talk about love your brother, you know, love your family, those kind of things. Instead, he uses a word, the word agapao is the verbal form, agape. Maybe you're more familiar with that. It's the noun. That's the word he uses when he talks about loving your enemy. And we said that love, that agapao kind of love is other-centered love. It's love. This is so important that you get this because we're going to come back to this again and again throughout the sermon. Because I'm going to say some things today that's going to frustrate you. I'm going to say some things that's going to confuse you. I'm going to say some things you're going to go, what? So keep coming back to remember, this is the agapao, agape love, love that has the other person's best interest in mind. That's the way God loves. That's the way Jesus loves. That's the way he calls us to love. And if we plug our own meaning into, you know, the loving feelings and I want to love in a way that makes me feel good, we're going to completely misunderstand what Jesus is saying. So keep this in mind. This other-centered kind of love is a love that is always seeking what's best for the person I'm loving. Of course, that means you got to be engaged. You got to be listening to that person. You got to know that person. You got to care about that person. I'm not just doing some loving thing. I'm doing what I think is the best thing for you. And years ago, I was influenced by a man named Larry Crabb. Just can't recommend him and his books enough. He's with Jesus now. But his books just really impacted me, especially when it comes to relationships. And actually, a lot of the things that I teach about relationships, I learned years ago from this guy, Larry Crabb. And he taught me a question to ask. I put up on the screen, and it's actually in your notes. What does it look like to love this person well? Knowing that this is other-centered love, this is the kind of love that seeks the best for them. What's the best thing for them? So I've learned, I've taught myself, and I've talked about this, you know, here at Open Door again and again and again, to train yourself to ask the question, what does it look like to love my spouse well? What does it look like to love my kids well in this situation? We're in these circumstances. What does it look like to love well versus some kind of a one-size-fits-all, always do this? No, this is an engaged kind of other-centered love where you're seeking the best of the person. So one of the things I will hope you take from this sermon is this question, and that you would ask this for the rest of your life, because you're going to be in relationships for the rest of your life, to ask this question. Sometimes, you know, 10, 20 times over the course of a day, depending on how many people you interact with. Maybe it's once a day, but that you would leave today's sermon with this question kind of in your pocket that you're asking all the time. Lord, what does it look like for me to love her well, love him well, love them well in this situation? In fact, I'd like you to get going with this. So would you always say that with me? That we'll start with the word what. Let's all say it together on all of our campuses out loud. Here we go. What does it look like to love this person well? And if you'll do that, and that's a prayer and it's a question, I believe that God will lead you and you'll grow to become a better and better lover of people. You'll become more and more like Jesus because he always loved and loves in the way that is best for us. Hallelujah. I don't. You know, even the times where I think to ask the question, sometimes I still, you know, love in a self-centered way. You know, it's what is going to be best for me. So when we get to some points in this sermon where you're like, what? That's impossible. What is he saying? Would you please come back to this question? What does it look like to love this person well? You ready? Say yes. Okay, here we go. So this question that Jesus, or this situation that Jesus gives us in verse 29. Just after, on the heels of loving your enemies, if someone slaps you on one cheek. So we're asking the question, what does it look like to love someone who slaps you? But don't fill it out yet. Don't fill it out. It's not yellow, right? A little joke. When I have the outline, it's yellow. And so actually cross this off because that's not the word. That's what you would think. But that's because when you and I in the 21st century hear the word slap, we only think about like an assault or some kind of an attack. You know, it's this very physical thing, and that's what we think of. But that is not the way people in the first century, and even today in some Middle Eastern cultures, not the way to think at all, because they understood that the kind of slap, especially in Matthew, when he says, when someone slaps you on the right cheek, there's something that's being set up here that is that he wants to communicate, that he wants to try to help us see and that we can teach how that might play out. So I'm going to surprise someone here in the audience who did not hear the first sermon. So Dwayne Miller, would you come up and take a swing at me? Don't be too eager to hit me. When I did this in the first service, you're ready, aren't you? Wow! Okay, so Jesus says if someone slaps you, and of course the idea here is slapping me on the right cheek. So let's just slow down because you look really eager. Maybe I should have picked someone else. Oh, there's Clay. I could have picked him. If you're going to think about it now before you hit me, if you're going to hit me on the right cheek, how are you going to do that? My right cheek? This is your left hand.
Yeah.
You can't use your left hand because your left hand is unclean. First century. Yep, that's right. See, in the first century, you eat with your right hand and you dispose of bodily waste with your left hand. I'm just saying, that's actually still the way it is today in many Middle Eastern cultures. If you are left-handed, you use your right hand to do all those things. So you eat with your right hand. So don't hit me with the unclean hand. So you're going to have to hit me on the right cheek with your right hand. So, look what he's doing there. Can everybody see what he's doing? He's going to backhand me. That is exactly right. When Jesus says, if someone slaps you, he means with the right hand on the right cheek, it's going to have to be a backhand. And that action is an insult. That's what people would have instantly thought of. Not that Dwayne is attacking me, but he's insulting me. And of course, Dwayne knows that, and you're getting ready to insult me right now. Not assault, but insult. And he's getting more and more eager. You should see his face. That's the message that's being sent. And so that's why I didn't want you to put the word slaps here. I want you to put the word insults, because that's the setting that Jesus is setting up here. When someone insults you. So if you can, kind of pull back from the hitting and think more about what you might do to insult somebody. A word you might use, a gesture you might use to send this message of insulting to someone. Now, as you're getting ready to slap me, to insult me, let's kind of continue. Once you step over here so people can see the screen, this whole idea of what is about to happen, you're good right there, is that Jesus is understanding that everybody is thinking that when someone slaps you, you slap them back. When someone insults you, you insult them back. It's called the lex talionis, and it comes from Exodus 21, where in the Mosaic law, it says an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. hand for hand, foot for burn, for foot, burn for burn, wart for wound, wound for wound, I'm trying to go fast, bruise for bruise. This law, surprise, was actually given to be an act of mercy, because somebody would get into a fight and their tooth would get knocked out, and the person who had been injured would wail on that other person, in some cases maiming them, maybe even killing them. This was happening all the time. There was a kind of an overreactive response. And so as an act of mercy and as an act of boundaries, this law, the Lex Talionis, which is called the law of retaliation, said, you know, you can't overreact. You can't beat them to a pulp if all they do is punch you in the face. And so it was trying to even the playing field. It was trying to give boundaries. And that whole idea of the law of retaliation, you can even see the word talio there. The law of retaliation simply came down to this. Whatever you do to me, I will do back to you. So Dwayne, just want you to know, just before you hit me here, whatever you do to me, I'm going to do back to you. Because we're living in the law of retaliation. So you ready? Oh, this was unrehearsed. Okay, thanks, Dwayne. Wow, look, I returned that. Now, Dwayne and I are not living, and I want to invite you to not live in the law of retaliation. I want to invite you into the law of love, the way of Jesus. Because even though there's this context of everybody thinking, you know, you retaliate, and you retaliate in kind, Jesus is going to call us to a different response. And it's going to be hard because we're so used to retaliating. So, you know, back in those days, if someone slaps you in the cheek, the law of retaliation calls you to do what? Say it. Slap you on the cheek or slap them on the cheek. If we're using Jesus' words, if someone takes your coat, verse 29, then you take their coat, right? Verse 30, if someone takes what belongs to you, then you take something that belongs to them. Let's apply it to today. If someone takes your ice cream, what? Well, here's what I would do. Burn your house down. No. So, no, we're talking about insults. So if someone insults you, you know, the law of retaliation is insult them back. This is just how you live. This is normal. This is what life is. And Jesus is saying, I want to step into what is normal. I want to step into what you expect. And I want to surprise you. And I want to call you to love people in a way that surprises them, shocks them. So if you're taking notes, when someone insults you, what does it look like to love them well? You surprise them with this new way of love by refusing to retaliate. That's what he means when he says, turn the other cheek. So instead of giving them what they deserve, whatever they did to you, insult you, you insult them back. In fact, you escalate, because that's the way these kind of things work. You insult me, I'll insult you. You insult me back, I'll insult you, and it just escalates. This is how it happens in your marriage. This is how it happens in fights. This is how it happens in conflict. When someone returns an insult with another insult, it just escalates. Have you ever been in an argument with somebody when someone insulted someone, another person insulted them back, and the other person was like, oh, you're right. No, it escalates. Because violence always begets, it births violence. This is the way violence works. This is the way of the human race. I'll get back at you and I'll amp up so you'll never do that to me again. I'll teach you. And so we live in a culture, you can see it in the Bible, right in the first couple of chapters of Genesis, you can see violence begets more violence. And throughout the Bible, throughout world history, wherever you have violence returned with more violence, it just escalates, escalates, escalates. Does this sound familiar today with all the things we have going on in our country, in our world, in our cities, in our marriages, in our relationships, in our businesses, on Twitter, other social media? It's this escalation of violence, escalation of insult, escalation of this destructive behavior. Jesus steps into that and says, I want to interrupt that. I want to disrupt the cycle of retaliation. I want to disrupt the cycle of violence. I want to invite you into a whole new way, excuse me, a whole new way of relating, a whole new way of responding when a violent word is spoken against you or a violent action is taken against you. I'm calling you to a whole new way, the Jesus way. And friends, when we begin to unpack this, it's going to blow our minds. Just like it did for the people who heard Jesus for the first time. And they're going to go, huh? How do you do that? In fact, I think we're so used to the eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, that it's like, it's what you do. It's my right. It's my right to retaliate. Doesn't the Bible teach that? And because there's a misunderstanding of that law that was meant to keep people from over-retaliating, and it bled into relationships, people just began to live this, it's my right to get back to you what you gave to me or even more. And I just think of what a different world we would be in if we had learned the ability to break the cycle of violence. If we had taken the words of Jesus seriously and learned to break the cycle of retaliation, the cycle of this violence. And last week, I told you about a book called Son of Hamas. Today, I want to take you back to my childhood and read a chapter or read a paragraph. Anybody remember when you were a kid reading The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn? Can I just see your hands? It's like, hey, we all read this. Do you remember the section where where Huckleberry Finn is hanging out with Buck, and Buck takes a shot at this guy riding his horse. And Huck says to him, what, did you want to try to kill him? And he says, yep, you bet I did. What did he do to you? Him? He never did nothing to me. Well, then why did you want to kill him? Why, nothing, it's only account of the feud. What's a feud? Remember this? Why, where were you raised? Don't you know what a feud is? I never heard about it. What is it? Well, says Buck, a feud is this way. A man has a quarrel with another man and kills him. Then that other man's brother kills him. Then the other brothers on both sides go for each other. Then one cousins chip in, and by everyone's killed off. Then there ain't no more feud. That's kind of how slow it takes time. It takes a long time, but the feud finally ends. Remember reading that when you were a kid? Maybe it went right over your head, but it cracks me up, even though it's describing a horrible, horrible scene. That's just the way we think, you know, and we get caught up into these cycles of violence that people don't even know why they're angry, why they're fighting, why they hate that person. It's just a feud. It's just the way you treat them. And Jesus is interrupting all of this and saying, I'm calling you to a new way. Don't retaliate. Turn the other cheek. And that sounds to us like just turn into a punching bag. Come on, some of you are thinking that, aren't you? I mean, how many times am I supposed to turn the other cheek? So Jesus is basically saying, put your hands, you know, in front of you or behind you, just let them have it all day long. Turn the other cheek. Be a wuss. Don't fight back. Being a wuss and not fighting back are not the same thing. In fact, Jesus calls us to a way of responding that's going to require a lot more strength than just hitting someone back. Let's go back. If someone strikes you, again, Matthew says on the right cheek, but Luke says on the cheek, then the law of retaliation is strike them back. But you're not going to do that. You're going to take the way of Jesus. Turn the other cheek. So if you remember when Dwayne was up here, he was going to strike me with his right hand by backhanding me. And now when I turn the other cheek, you know, expose this one. He doesn't know how to backhand me anymore because my nose is in the way. And so he can't insult me again. He can't backhand me again. Now he has to open his hand or use his fist. And now he's just escalated the thing. And furthermore, in a shame honor culture that they're living in, when this guy backhanded, when Dwayne was about to backhand me, he was going to shame me with his way of saying, I'm above you. This is what, when we insult people, that's what we're saying. I'm above you. I'm putting you under me. I'm putting you down. We even use the phrase, putting someone down. It's elevating me and putting you down. Well, when I, watch, instead of thinking of turn the other cheek, because it's kind of a wimpy thing, when I stand and look him in the eye and turn the other cheek, I'm making a statement of dignity. I'm making a statement of, you won't treat me like I'm less than. I'm not going to just cow to you, and I'm not going to fight back. I'm going to look you in the eye. I'm going to intentionally turn the other cheek as if to say, you treat me like an equal. So it's a subversive way of standing up for your rights. It's a subversive way of maintaining your dignity. It's a far cry from just wimping down. It's standing up, but doing it in a way that actually shames the other person, because now they got to decide, do they want to continue in that shaming and putting you down? It exposes them. See how different this would have been heard in Jesus' day? You just exposed me for me shaming. You just exposed me and you stood up to me. You did not retaliate. You did not wuss out. You took a third way. And without me explaining that, you're not going to see that in the text. And this is one of the things that is so common with Jesus. He does something or says something that causes people to go, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. That's completely different. And we miss it and we think he's just wussing out. He's not. He's standing up. He's subverting that person's attempt to shame you. And it's a whole different route. So this is not Jesus's advice for a woman who's in a home where her husband, because he's drunk or because he's in a rage or because he doesn't know how to handle his emotions, hits his wife. Jesus, this is not the scenario that Jesus is creating. So he would not say to that woman, just take it again. Just let him just hit you again, just as best you can do. That's not at all what Jesus is saying. And so you're asked the question, well, then what do I do? What if someone breaks into my house? Do I just say, here's my, my bank account while you're at it. Just take it all. Is that was supposed to happen? Anybody remember the movie Les Miserables? I can never say it right. Les Miserables. It's from French. I don't know French. Remember the story where the thief, Jean Valjean, comes in and steals the silver from the bishop? And then the police catch him, bring him back to the bishop with the silver in his pouch, and says, this guy said that you gave it to him. And the bishop says, oh, I did, but I also gave you the candles. Remember this, the story? You guys know this story? Am I informing you about something you don't know about? You haven't seen Les Mis? Oh my gosh, some of you are giving me weird looks like you don't know this story. Go read the book, Victor Hugo, or watch the movie, find it on Netflix somewhere. And so the bishop says, while the cops are there, to Jean Valjean, who's got the silver, right, red-handed, he goes, yes, I gave it to him, but I also gave him the candlesticks, and you left them behind, Jean Valjean. And he's like, what? He's just stunned, because the bishop should be saying, you better put that guy in jail. You better give him what he deserves, because he stole from me. Instead, he returns this kindness, this like, so we'll get to that in a second. How does this play out in our lives? And I think it's a legitimate question to ask, and I want to make this as practical as possible. I'm going to take a big risk here. I don't believe that Jesus is talking about how to handle someone who assaults you, but I want to take a moment or two to play this out, because this is the world we live in. And based upon some other things that Jesus said, and I will admit to you, based upon a guy named Dr. Gary Brashears, is a theologian out in Western Seminary in Portland. I want to talk about some real practical ways that you might be able to deal with using the ethics of Jesus, the way of Jesus, how you might practically deal with someone who is breaking into your home or who is broken into your bedroom or who's coming after you in an alley, because we live in a world where these things happen. So I'm taking a risk here, but I'm just trying to help you out. For those of you who are serious, I want to follow Jesus, and I don't see a verse that tells me what to do exactly. So, what do I do? So what do I do when someone's assaulting me? Well, we just heard Jesus say, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. So let's use the words of Jesus, and let's say, first of all, we want you to get prepared, and then the next thing, pray out loud. So let me do these at both same time. First thing I want to say to those of you who are in a situation where you might find yourself in an alley, those of you who are in situations that surprise you, I want to invite you to be more prepared. Sometimes, in fact, a number of times, we find ourselves in situations that are violent or that are scary because we weren't thinking. We weren't prepared. We shouldn't have been in that situation. We shouldn't have been there. So I want to just call that out and invite you, think about where you're walking. Think about where you're going. Think about how you might be prepared. Think about how you might respond if something were to happen, okay? So that's the kind of the preface. And then Jesus says, pray. I want to invite you to pray out loud. So I hate thinking like this, but the intruders in the house or they're in the room and they're moving towards you with bad intent. Pray out loud. Not quietly, not silently, but pray out loud. And what are you supposed to pray? You might pray, Lord, protect this man from what he's about to do. Remember, this is not all I care about is myself. This is other-centered love. This is why some of your minds are getting so blown. We're supposed to love our enemy. We're supposed to love the person who's coming after us. And we're going to pray out loud for them. And I want you to do it out loud just so you can hear yourself and so they can hear the mind-blowing thing you're doing. You're not pulling a gun out. You're praying for them, and you're doing it out loud. Lord, protect them from what they're about to do. Lord, stop them. And Jesus, I pray in your name, step into this situation. Move here, Lord. Now, this, I know it sounds crazy to some of you, but since you have his or her best interest in mind versus your own, let's just play out real quickly that they carry out the assault, whether it's stealing or whether it's something other that's much, much worse. They're going to become a criminal. They might go to prison for that. They may get the death penalty for that. Their whole life may be ruined because of this moment of desperation or this moment of rage or this moment of drunkenness or this moment of whatever it is that's going on in their brain that's causing them to do something so violent. And so you're calling that out. You're praying out loud and you're disrupting. I guarantee you that person, I hope this never happens to you, but that person, it's the last thing they expected to hear was you to pray out loud for them. Lord, protect them from what they're thinking about doing. Lord, interrupt them. Just disrupt, Lord. Even if you were to pray something nonsensical, not nonsensical, but even if you were just to say, Jesus, or help, not help. Pray, address God out loud. That will surprise them. That will might cause them just to back off for a second because they're not expecting that. And hold on, I know what you're thinking. The next thing, start talking to the person. Try to engage them because you are going to love this enemy and you're trying to talk them out of what they're doing. Think about what your mother would think if she knew you were right here. Does your wife know you're here? Did you have a bad day today? Something where you're engaging them. You're asking them a question. You're talking to them and you're getting them off center. You're kind of taking them by surprise. This is kind of a trick that some martial arts disciplines use. You do something that gets your opponent off balance. This is what you're trying to do, is you're trying to get them off balance. You're trying to disrupt their rage, their drunkenness, whatever it is. So these two things are both, you know, completely what they're not expecting for you to do at all. Let's play this out. And I hope this never happens to you, but we live in a day and age where these things happen. What might you do if these things don't work? Then you might just try to stop them, use force, grab their arm or push them or tackle them. And you say, well, wait a minute, that sounds violent. There's a difference between using force and using violence. There's a man here who I know is in the police force. He knows, he's been taught. There's a difference between using force and using violence. You use force to restraint, and violence is something you're taught to respond at the last resort. And so I don't want to spend too much more time on this, but these things are provocative, what I'm saying. Tackle them, push them, grab them, trying to interrupt this process while you're praying out loud, while you're talking to them. And you're thinking, Jim, I'm not going to think about that when the moment is happening. That's why I'm saying this now. That's why I'm saying be prepared, especially for those of you who live in these kind of situations, these neighborhoods, these places where you work, or you're trafficking in areas you shouldn't be. I'm trying to help you think through this kind of thing, just to make it as practical as possible. Now I'm going to blow your mind. Because I'm going to suggest if this were to happen to you and this is not interrupting it, this is not working, praying out loud, talking to people, use force, then this next thing that you're doing is to now, as a last resort, in an impossible situation, use the weapon. Yes, that just sounds so contradictory to what I just said. I know it does. This is a last resort. I don't believe that Jesus' desire for you is when a man comes into a house to attack you, to rape you, to hurt you, that Jesus wants you to just stand there and go, okay. I just don't see any time that Jesus would promote that whatsoever. And I'm also, I'm fully aware of this. I'm also realizing that if you were to use a weapon, that might involve you shooting that weapon, it might involve killing that person. And in a legal court, you're probably okay because it's in self-defense. But we're not talking about the legal court. We're talking about people who are trying to follow Jesus. And so you taking their life would be a sin. I know you're like, but I'm in self-defense. That's legal. So when I take out that gun, if I were to use a gun to shoot them, to kill them, I'm going to repent for that sin. I killed somebody. I know it was in self-defense, but I still killed somebody. And I'm creating some confusion for you. I understand. I'm just trying to help out people who are in circumstances that some of you are not in. And I'm trying to help you see how powerful these things are. And I'm also trying to help you see, I'm not talking about you laying over and just let someone do whatever they want. And I'm kind of going outside of this verse because I know some of you are asking, then how do I respond when this kind of things happen? Now, in your notes, there's a lot more space for point one than there is two and three because that's where I wanted to spend all my time. I'm going to rip through points two and three on purpose. But I've took the risk to go there just to be a help. And there's a lot of stuff for you to think through and wrestle through. But the two things I want you to be most focused on is all the context of what does it mean to love the person who's assaulting me? Love the person who's attacking me? What does it mean to love my enemy? That's the big question we're asking. And then I'll close the sermon in a couple minutes with the second big thing. So let's move on. So verse 29b, if someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt for them. At first, this looks like just kind of a petty theft that might be happening on the street. But the language here implies very strongly that we're in a courtroom setting. And this idea here of someone takes your coat is like, that's what I'm extracting from you as payment for what you've done or for the situation you're in. I took you to court and you don't have anything, but so I'm taking your coat. Well, the coat here is not just the coat you wore today. In the first century, it was the cloak that was kept you warm at night. It was your blanket. That was you keep from freezing to death. Because guys, we're talking about people who are in living in poor circumstances. They don't have multiple coats. They don't have other lots of clothing. They're not dragging a suitcase as they walk around. Some of these people are poor. They don't have anything. And so this word, if someone takes your cloak, a person taking your cloak is doing much more than just taking something from you. They're being unfair to you. Instead of taking something of less value, or instead of saying, you can work this off, they're going for the jugular. They're taking what you need to survive. Your cloak that keeps you warm, keeps you from freezing at night. And so when Jesus says, do not withhold your shirt, your tunic, the inside shirt, he's like stripping down to nothing. He's calling them to show this love, this Jesus kind of love, this what you might call highly impractical kind of love by showing kindness. Because that's the way of Jesus. That's the way you love if you're loving like Jesus. Then the final one, what does it look like to love someone who is in this situation? Jesus says, verse 30, give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. What does it look like to love someone who's trying to take advantage of you? This is not the beggar who's on the side of the road. This is the person who comes to you, to your door, and they're asking for something that they may or may not need, and they're trying to take advantage of you. And Jesus says, let them have it. Do not demand it back. This is mind-boggling. What is this? This is generosity. So surprise them with love by being generous. Now, all these things and more that we've been talking about, let me just summarize them real quickly. To the one who insults you, refuse to retaliate. To the one who is unfair to you, show kindness. To the one who's trying to take advantage of you, be generous. That kind of living has got something in mind that is absolutely critical to you understanding this sermon, understanding this text, and understanding the heart of Jesus. Do not just brush this off as impractical, even though some of you want to. Do not just brush this off as impossible. Recognize that Jesus is not giving these as principles for the general population. He is addressing disciples, people. And like this is some of you, maybe many of you, who have said, I want to follow Jesus, to learn from Jesus. I want to become more like Jesus. I'm a disciple of Jesus. That's what's most important to me. So I'm watching the way Jesus lives, and I'm listening to the things that Jesus is saying, and I am turning my back on the way my culture is calling me to live, which is violence, which is put yourself number one, which is only be concerned about self-protection. It's me, 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 mine. I'm turning my back on the culture and everything that's telling me to live for myself, turning my back to it, and I'm following Jesus to learn the way of Jesus, to become more like Jesus. And in order for me to do that, I've got to stop trusting my culture, the culture's teaching, the culture's answers. Again, retaliation, violence, look out for number one. I'm turning away from that to trust Jesus. Actually, let me use this word. Instead of trusting the answers, the responses, the actions of the world, that violence begets violence. Look out for number one. You retaliate, get back at them, teach them a lesson. I'm not going to trust that that's the good thing to do. I'm not going to trust that that's the way to go forward. And turning my back, I'm going to put my trust in Jesus, the way of Jesus, and how he lived his life. So we ask the question, how do we live like this? Only like this. By trusting the way Jesus, watch, trusted the Father, the kindness of the Father, the mercy of the Father, the provision of the Father. What I'm teaching, what Jesus taught, is stupidity. Pause. if you're not trusting in the Father. This is the only way this makes any sense, is because you believe and you're trusting in your Father in heaven, who sees a much bigger picture than what the world is teaching. You're living out your faith. It's not just talk anymore. You're trusting, like Jesus, you're trusting the way of the Father. You're trusting the mercy, the kindness, the provision of the Father. And you're living out that trust. That's the way Jesus lived. And you, those of you who know your story, knows the Bible, know that this way got Jesus killed. Yeah, I acknowledge that. Because that was part of God's plan. Jesus getting killed was not an accident. It was not a tragedy. It was not a mistake. It was God's ordained way for the sins of the world to be taken care of. Jesus trusted the Father, and because he did, you are in a saving relationship with the Father today. If Jesus had retaliated, Jesus could have called him. Remember the cross? Remember even before the cross when he was being hit? Remember Jesus didn't silently just turn the other cheek. Remember he stood up and said, if I did something wrong, tell me what it is. Why did you strike me? Jesus is being subversive. He's not retaliating, but he's also not this little weak wuss who's just letting people pound on him. He's standing up. He's keeping his dignity. And he says, you didn't take my life. I gave you my life. I laid down my life. So when Jesus did what he did, you say, well, it got him killed. That was the Father's plan so redemption could happen. Jesus trusted the Father. And it was painful beyond belief. Can you, will you trust the Father the way Jesus did? That's the call today. To follow Jesus, to learn from Jesus, to become more like Jesus. And how did he live? He trusted God. See, no one will ever get to heaven and go, oh, I trusted Jesus too much. I'm glad I made it. But there will be people in hell who say, I was given the opportunity. I was invited to trust Jesus. I know I should have, and I chose not to. Friends, there's a bigger picture here than just your 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years on earth. Will you trust Jesus? It just doesn't get any in your face more than this. And I will say, and there are hundreds and thousands of other people, millions who would say, looking back on my life, because I've been around a while, I would say, it is so sweet to trust in Jesus, just to take him at his word. Like that old hymn says, to put this into practice. It's the way of life. Because he who seeks his own life will lose it. But he who loses his life for my sake in the gospel, Jesus says, will win it. Two things. Will you start asking the question, what does it look like to love this person well? And will you take seriously what it means to trust Jesus? Lord, we leave these words, these questions just hanging in the air. And Holy Spirit, I invite you to fill us with courage, to fill us with the ability to trust you, to live out this trust. May we hear echoing in our ears as we leave today the voice of those who have trusted you. It's so sweet to trust in Jesus. And may we join the choir that is singing, Jesus, Jesus, how I've trust you, how I've proved it's worth trusting you again and again and again. This, my life is a testimony of trusting Jesus. And may we live our lives in such a way that it's not just one or two, but there's a growing number of people who are taking seriously what it means to follow the way of Jesus, to learn from Jesus, so we may become more and more like Jesus. So we trust you, Lord. We trust you, Jesus, even as we pray in your holy name.